from DynastyLeagueFootball.com and the DLF family of podcasts, this is a Super Flex Super Show. Your main source for strategy, speculation, player values, and all things Super Flex. With innovative strategies like QBX and the Super Flex Flywheel, exercises like Tinderflex, Super Six, You're Nuts, and Next Week This Week, the Super Show's Super Friends never lack the content you need to help you draft and manage your roster in the fastest-growing fantasy football format, Superflex, on the Superflex Super Show. Enjoy your DLF podcast and stay sexy and super flexy.
Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church, but I'ma keep tapping return. I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges. I yearn for the feeling I earn. I'ma win, it's a turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict, Russell
Rocky.
Other names, Trade Addicts Pod. Let's go.
I am Rocky Petrella, and I have a trading problem.
And I'm Justin Rogers, and I also have a trading problem.
And I am Kevin Tompkins, and like these two gentlemen, I also have a trading problem.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to session 162 of the Trade Addicts Podcast, a member of the DLF family of podcasts and a proud member of the Dynasty Addicts Podcast Network. I feel like I have to say it, the DAP Network, if you will, and we will.
And we will.
I mentioned on Twitter earlier today, Russ is taking the holiday off, the slacker that he is. And I got Justin Rogers here as my co-host tonight. So, Justin, how you doing tonight? How was your holiday weekend? I know you mentioned you're going on vacation, too.
Right. My holiday weekend's great. Started Friday and it'll end next Tuesday. So, hey, I'm good. I'm golden.
That's a 10-day weekend, 12-day weekend, something like that?
Yeah, it's one of the long weekends.
I'll take that anytime. But we also got a great guest tonight, Kevin Tompkins at you can give the Twitter handle for yourself, but it does a lot of stuff. So, Kevin, why don't you tell everybody who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do?
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. The Twitter handle is at KTompkinsII. I am the second Kevin Tompkins, so we'll bend into that. But you can find me. I do work over at Ball Blast Football, Fighting Chance Fantasy, as well as Fantasy Pros. Myself, Scott Fishbowl 9 winner, Gary Haddow, and Andrew Cooper of Fantasy Alarm, we are doing a podcast called Lightning Round. We're doing some short form content as well. Just started a best ball championship, which just filled up in about 36 hours. So, to raise some money here for Epilepsy Foundation, which I have as well. It's a great cause, and just happy to be part of the community. And let's talk some football, guys.
Yeah, that's great. You always see those charity, especially this time of year with Scott Fishbowl season, those charity tournaments popping up are always a great thing. So nice to hear you're doing that. I did want to ask, why are you reasonable, Kevin Tompkins? And don't you know that reasonable doesn't work on Twitter?
Yeah,
I'm more contrarian, I feel like, than a lot of people. And if I'm reasonable, then it's, I love to poke fun at myself. And, somebody just kind of said, I think it might have been Jake Trowbridge, actually, where that came from. You guys had him on, last month or the month before?
Yeah.
So it's funny. It just kind of came up in conversation and just added it randomly to my, my profile. And I've had it there for over a year now.
Okay. Yeah, I like it. So every new guest we have on, this is your first time on the Trade Addicts podcast. We do the little interview session. So I'm going to start off asking you, how long have you been playing fantasy football?
I've been playing fantasy football since the year 2000. Actually went into my library's computer lab to do some schoolwork and ended up on Yahoo and ended up getting into a random public league and did a draft. And I remember getting Steven Davis, the former Washington running back, who was a late round steal. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to chase that feeling, because it felt good being able to pluck a guy in like the 10th, 11th round that just ended up being a fantasy stud. So ever since that, and then I obviously got a computer. I mean, 2000, I was 16. So, I chased that feeling and just absolutely love fantasy and just love everything that goes into it, and been doing it ever since.
Yeah, 2000's a good long time. Not quite. We've had people come on with the whole, I was in the pre-internet. We had to write the scores by hand. Yeah.
So that's how I did my first league, though. When I ran my first league at home, I did it all by hand. It was, I'm a very neat, organized person. And obviously we don't have Google Sheets or Google Docs, in 2001, 2002. So I love doing stuff like that by hand. And, it was a lot of fun. It was like me and my dad and a few other friends that just did that. And just that certainly helped build all that too.
Yeah. And I'm definitely one of those old heads too. I was doing redraft back in the 90s where you had to, I think we did have email, so I think we sent out a lot of stuff by email, but definitely wasn't all the sites set up to handle everything at that point. But how long have you been playing Dynasty?
Dynasty is something since I've been on Twitter, really diving into the fantasy football community, and I've only been doing Dynasty for maybe 2.5-3 years now. Just getting into random leagues on Twitter, and It's a learning process, because I've always been that redraft. Every season I start boning up in July, and now this whole new world's open up with Dynasty, where it's year round and all this stuff. And it's fantastic. I'm still new and still getting into it and the nuances and everything. So I've definitely I've been taken to the woodshed as far as some trades and just the whole year round thing.
Yeah, that I mean, that's the best part of it, the whole year round thing. And
for real.
Yeah, and I'm not that far off from you myself. I mean, I think I started in 2015 with the home league, but I only gotten heavy into it probably about 2018. So, not that far off from you. So, so given that you're fairly new to Dynasty, do you have some best and worst trades for us?
Yeah, so I started a dynasty with a mix of a couple people from Twitter and some of my home league people who were, were doing redraft and, were kind of, oh, I want a little bit more. I want to, I don't want to just do this redraft league every year. So gathered all those people. We started a dynasty league last year. So October, I remember this is when Austin Eckler had gotten hurt, but I ended up trading Leonard Fournette, Josh Jacobs, Ito Smith, and a third for Evan Engram, Austin Eckler, and two 2021 firsts, which ended up being Jamar Chase and Kyle Pitts.
Nice. That is nice.
That's beautiful. I love every second of it, and I'll never not needle that into the manager that I pulled that one off on.
Yeah, and I'm not in love with any of those people you gave away. Even Josh Jacobs, I was always lower on than most. So I love that return. So do you have a worse trade?
This is one of the Twitter leagues, and it was completely my fault. And looking on it now, it's not that bad of a trade, but at the time it was the height of Keyshawn Vaughn mania, right after the draft. So it was Keyshawn Vaughn and a first, which ended up being Rashad Bateman for Tyler Boyd. And we had, me and the manager had talked about it for a good week about return, because I remember wanting like Anthony Miller back too, and we kept talking, and I we were we thought we were on the same page. Then he offered that, and I just quick accepted, not realizing that he kind of changed it up. So I'm like, oh, I gave up a first too. And I'm sitting here like, oh, my God, I just gave up the world for Tyler damn Boyd. But you know, in looking at it now, it looks pretty good. So, you know, I'll take
it. That's the worst trade you've ever made?
I know. I mean, that's like – you could at the time you could have made the argument you should have gotten more value for Vaughn, you know, based on his hype, but but that basically is like Rashad Bateman and negative value for Tyler Boyd.
So right. That's not bad. No, it's not bad.
And this is a very pro Tyler Boyd podcast where Russ loves Boyd. Yes, so.
I am all about the like you look on. I am always talking about Bengals, and I'm a Packer fan diehard, but you know, I've been called a closeted Rams fan because I love Robert Woods. I've been called a closeted Titans fan because I love AJ Brown. I've been called a closeted Bengals fan because of Higgins, Chase, Boyd, Burrow. So, you know, I'm getting it from all angles here, but yeah, any Bengal, I mean, wheels up.
So basically you're just a fan of every team in the league.
Not the Vikings.
Except the other NFC North teams. Okay. And then finally, what is a guiding principle you take in trading?
With trading, you know, I just look to, you know, you're never going to win a trade the second you make the trade. And you don't always have to win a trade either. You know, you just get, you know, you're not never going to win that trade immediately. Just do what makes sense for you and just go and do it, because you know what? You know, if it makes sense for you, that's all that matters. You're not going to try to get internet clout and, you know, I say I traded this guy for this guy. Give me 100 likes. You know, it's just does not happen that way. You can't think, you know, that narrowly and just make your trades. Be happy with it. Does it make sense for your team? If it does, then that's really all that matters.
Yeah, and that's definitely a good one. I definitely live by too. I always generally tend to send offers I think are fair to begin with. I generally don't have a lot of wiggle room for negotiation, and I'm not worried about winning. I'm definitely going to send. I mean, we've talked about on Trade Addicts in recent episodes of stuff that definitely people think I overpaid for guys. So as long as I get my guy, I think it makes my team better. Who cares what Twitter thinks or if you quote unquote won the trade?
Yep.
So a lot of times we will go into the news from here, but as far as I could think, there was not much news this week, unless you guys want to talk about how Tim Tebow is going to be the new Taysom Hill or something. So we will go right into the trades and listener questions. So we always let the guests decide which we go to first. So Kevin, you want to do some trades? Or you want to do some listener questions?
Let's do some trades.
Okay. Yeah, we got a handful that we didn't have a ton this week, but all were from two leagues, so neither of which was TA1, so we can say that they're all 12 team PPR Superflex 1.75 tight end premium with 0.05 for return yards. And our first one is from I'll just say it, the best TA league, TA3. It's Chase Edmonds and David Montgomery for Elijah Moore and a 22 first. So Kevin, what do you think of that one to start off?
You're just bringing them right out. You know, there's no wiggle room here. As far as Edmonds, I worry about James Conner and, you know, what kind of role he's going to have at the beginning. You know, Chase Edmonds came out just a great PPR option last season. David Montgomery, I mean, how much can really be said about, you know, the end of last season where he played, what, five of the worst, you know, run defenses and just absolutely steamrolled. So, you know, I think I would take Elijah Moore in the first, to be quite honest, because I am much lower on Chase Edmonds just because I'm, you know, I don't know how that backfield is going to go. And they could always introduce somebody else to it, too. And then David Montgomery, I don't think he's certainly not going to get that work that he got at the end of last season. Now that Tariq Cohen's back, they've got Damian Williams. You know, it's there's a lot of questions to ask. And, you know, one thing that I always abide by is the less questions you have to ask, you know, I'm always going to side with that. So Elijah Moore is someone I've been very high on. I wish my Green Bay Packers could have swung for that fence. But, you know, it is what it is. Elijah Moore, I absolutely love. And I think a 22 first with the guys that are going to be coming out in that draft class, I'm going to side with that.
And I'm very interested to hear Justin's answer because we had a spirited debate involving a potential trade involving Chase Edmonds earlier this past week. So Justin, what do you think of this one?
Nope. But no, okay, so I'm not a Chase Edmonds person anymore. I was. But I'll still really take the David Montgomery side because I don't know. Elijah Moore is he could be something, but not early in his career, I don't believe. And I think Montgomery is still a very valuable piece, obviously. But yeah, we don't need to really get into Chase Edmonds. I mean, I don't like to talk about backup running backs all day long anyway. So
that's out of my zero RB wheelhouse, man. That's Chase Edmonds. That's my guy. But James Conner is my guy now. I mean, always take the cheapest option, and you got two backfield mates like that.
Yeah, my thoughts on this, sir, I kind of lean towards the Montgomery side as well. I do like Chase Edmonds a little more than you two, I think. He was an RB2 last year in a very similar situation where Drake was playing the Connor role. So even if he's the secondary guy, he showed he can still score in that offense from a fantasy perspective. I am not super high. You know, I don't think most people are super high on David Montgomery at this point, but I do think he's probably worth a random 22 first at this point. So I think the value is pretty equal there. And Chase Edmonds and Elijah Moore, you know what? This one to me it looks definitely more like a rebuild versus contender type thing. And I'm kind of fine with either side, but I tend to look always at things through the win now perspective. So that's why I think I'd rather have the Edmonds Montgomery side. You mentioned about question marks, Kevin. And I mean, Elijah Moore and a 22 first are also question marks too. So,
yeah.
I think a lot does depend on your view of Elijah Moore. I like him a lot. I did like his tape coming out, but I mean, there's Mims there. If they don't cut Crowder, he could eat into Moore's role. And there's Davis there. And I'm not a big Zach Wilson fan anyway. So I'm worried how he's going to support these guys, which guy will be his guy that maybe does stand out from the rest. But that's basically my take on it. I lean the Edmonds Montgomery side, but I think it's a pretty fair return if you're trying to rebuild and get out from those two guys. I mean, I could definitely – those two guys are not going to increase in value. So Elijah Moore and the 22 first both could. So I definitely get it. We'll move on to the next trade then. So the next trade, I believe this was a Russ Dynasty Outhouse trade. Joe Mixon for TJ Hockenson, and this one hurt me because I traded a Mixon, and I wish I had traded Joe Mixon for TJ Hockenson. So, so Justin, what do you think of this one?
You know, with the 1.75, I'll take Hawk, man, because I think Mixon scores more points over the next year or two, but you're looking at Hawk having 6 or 7 years of production in my mind, and the positional scarcity. I mean, I'll take Hawk and scrap a few points in the starting lineup.
Obviously, given my comments, I'm with you. I actually am pretty bullish on Hawk. I think I feel like he's going to take that next step to where he could be one of those difference maker guys this year. You're looking in that, you know, for tight ends, especially with the 1.75, you're looking for that guy that is going to potentially lead his team in targets. I mean, that's what you get from Kittle and Kelsey and Waller.
Yeah.
And he's one of those guys who could definitely do that. They got nothing else at receiver. Swift may get some targets, but he certainly seems to be on track to be that guy. And if he jumps into, like, even Waller or any of the three, if he's as good as any of those guys, if he gets 120, 130, 140 targets,
right?
I just think he's going to produce, and the offense isn't great, but I can see a lot of him getting a lot of the touchdowns they do get.
Yeah, you know, he had 101 targets last year, and I mean, I don't think there's any reason to suggest that he can't make an incremental improvement on that, you know, get to 110, 115, and then maybe 120-ish. And now you're talking about an 80, 85 catch guy. So, yeah. I mean, that sounds great to me.
Right, who's a red zone threat. But Kevin, what do you think?
I've been on TJ Hockenson. You know, we just did all those Fantasy Cares Eliminators, and I think I have Hockenson. I did 12. I think I have Hockenson in about 7 or 8 of them. You know, so 1.75 PPR. I'm all about TJ Hockenson. And then, you know, Justin mentioned it about the longevity of just the position. I mean, Joe Mixon's going to turn 25 in a couple months here and, you know, going to start to hit that apex. And then it's, you know, going down from there. Whereas TJ Hockenson, I mean, he's what, 23, I believe. And, you know, he's got at least 6-7 years of elite, you know, production ahead of him. I mean, if he takes that step, I mean, who are they really going to throw to Tyrell Williams, you know, 90 this year? I mean, come on, right. Let's be honest. I mean, TJ Hockenson, you know, get up to 115, 120 targets. Yeah, you're looking at 85, 90 catches this year. And then, you know what, maybe when the Lions do add pass catchers, you know, and in the next year or two, you can always just flip him. You know, yeah. You can, you know, because he certainly has that kind of value. If you know, sell him at his high point and you get something back for him, you know, when they start adding pass catchers, and maybe he may not be the one, but he could be the second pass, which is absolutely valuable, but you know, that kind of caps a little bit of that upside. So take Hockenson, you know, I'll take him over Mixon all day long, especially 1.75 with the, you know, caveat that, yeah, you can maybe flip him if he really overachieves and gets up to that maybe 125, 130 target, gets close to like 95 catches. And then, you know, if they add a receiver in the draft or a couple receivers in free agency, whatever the case may be, just turn around and flip him.
Yeah, and Russ will be very happy to hear our answers because he did get the Hockenson side in this. But I did want to ask you guys, whoever wants to answer can chime in, just what you think of him. Because I've been a Mixon guy, but I'm not sure what to think going forward. Do you see – I mean, he does have, you know, to potentially Burrow for a whole year. They added Chase, so the offense should be pretty damn good. Geo's gone. What do you I mean, does Mixon finally become what we want him to be, or is he just the RB2 who we think can be an RB1 that we've seen most of his career?
I mean, he has no excuse now, right? I mean, with Geo gone, you know, there goes all the, you know, Mixon should be getting that long down and distance, third down, 2-minute offense work. So there is no excuse for Joe Mixon. If he can't produce now, I don't think it's ever going to happen. And we're not talking about Joe Mixon like he's like a scrub, like he's an RB2. I mean, he's a borderline RB1, you know, and getting up into that RB1 territory seemingly every year whenever he's healthy. So, you know, Joe Mixon should be able to do a lot of work in this offense. You got to figure with the Bengals adding a second round offensive lineman and adding a couple more offensive linemen later on in the draft that unit's going to be improved. Jonah Williams, too. So, you know, that's been the big bugaboo. We're talking about, you know, Penei Sewell getting drafted, you know, that whole big conversation of Chase versus Sewell, and they obviously went with Chase. You know, they had to fortify the line, so hopefully that's enough for Joe Mixon with all those passing game pieces to be able to kind of realize that role we've all been wanting him to have for the last couple of years.
Yeah, you know, on a per game basis, he's been an RB1 most of his career. Problem is that we're getting 14 games, 10 games, et cetera. So it kind of gets a little rough. Of course, last year was – but, I mean, he was RB11 on PPG last year, a little down year.
A lot of that was propped up by one game, though.
Well, that's a lot of players. So you're right, though. He had that huge monster
game. He had like a 40-point, yeah.
2019 was a little rough. I think he was like RB19 in per game. But then in 2018, RB9 or something. So, I mean, you're looking at – I bought him this year earlier on a contending team because he's undervalued right now, in my opinion. So,
yeah, I think, you know, adding the fact that they didn't add a running back, I think what they had Chris Evans in the 7th round. Yeah, I mean, the fact that they didn't. Right. Exactly. The fact that they didn't add somebody like a Kenny Gainwell, you know, to take that role that Geo had, you know, says pretty much everything that we're looking for. And Joe Mixon taking that solid step toward getting all of that work. You know, I'm not going to really pin my hopes on P. Ryan or Travion Williams, you know, to get that work. I think it's really Mixon's. And if he wants it, he can have it. If he doesn't produce, then geez.
Yeah, I was going to say, I guess you're not, you don't feel Joe Mixon is threatened by Samaje P. Ryan then. but yeah, and I overstated the case a little bit. I guess I just more was thinking, like, we've all been waiting for him to have that, like, Dalvin Cook type season. We all think he has that talent, and it's never happened yet. But that's what I was getting at. But But anyway, we'll move on to the final TA3 trade here, which was Cooper Kupp, Jarvis Landry, and a 22-4 for Laviska Shenault, LaMichael Perine, and a 22-2. And this was another outhouse trade, but I'll wait till we give our thoughts before I say which side he got. So, Kevin, what do you think of this one?
I mean, just looking at this on the surface, I mean, I'm scared to death that Urban Meyer is going to Chip Kelly this entire Jaguars franchise. You know, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm not too keen on the Jaguars pieces right now, even though I love Laviska Shenault, and I think he could be more than that, you know, that Percy Harvin, Curtis Samuel type, you know, that Urban Meyer loves to have that kind of Swiss Army knife. I'm going to take Kupp and Landry in that fourth. I think, you know, Kupp and Landry are just, you know, criminally underrated almost every season. All they do is produce. I'm going to take the veterans here. You know, Perine doesn't really do anything for me. You're looking at just a mix of backs with the Jets, you know, and Perine can either find a little bit of a role or get completely shut out. And then the second, you know, second to second, but give me Kupp and Landry in the fourth.
Yeah, I'm with you on the whole Urban Meyer thing. I don't get what's going on over there. He also, I've mentioned multiple times, seems to hate Laviska Shenault. He wanted Kadarius Toney. He's lining ETN up at wide receiver. It doesn't seem like he wants, you know, Shenault is that kind of guy that we think can have that kind of gadget Toney role, or and ETN, you know, is sort of a gadget at wide receiver that would take away from Shenault. So, and I'm a big Michael Carter guy, so I don't really like Michael Perine that much. Some people are trying to hype up Ty Johnson. I mean, that backfield will probably honestly just be a mess. So he doesn't do anything for me. And the second is nice, but I'd much rather have the Kupp Landry in the fourth side. I definitely think I'm higher on Kupp than most people. He had a little bit of down year, but most years he's in that wide receiver, low-end wide receiver one, high-end wide receiver two range. I think Stafford elevates that whole offense. And there's not a ton of competition for targets there. It's basically him and Woods. You know, behind them is Van Jefferson and Tutu Atwell, who I'm not too worried about, either of those guys. And then there's Higbee there, but and Akers has potential pass catching opportunity, but he didn't show it last year anyway. So I'm definitely taking the Kupp and Landry side as well. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, and I'm on the same page as you guys, and I really feel like Russ probably bought Shenault. And so I feel bad for him. Like, I want to hug him because that just
he did get the Shenault side. He did get the pick upgrade, but I don't know what he was thinking there.
And you guys didn't even talk about Landry, really. I still like Landry as a wide receiver too. You know, a plug and play guy every week that is going to give you consistent numbers.
Yeah, that's a good point. He still produced even he started off not so great, but especially after Beckham went out, he looked nice. And I think as the offense improves, they had a lot of weird games last year too. With
they had some storm
weather games,
in the middle of
that game he missed where they had, the whole team had no receivers, and it was just a weird season for the Browns. But I definitely think he can be back in that wide receiver two range.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the there's two TA5 trades here as well. The first one is Nick Chubb and Debo Samuel for George Kittle, again with the hefty premium. So Kevin, what do you think of that one?
Oh, geez, you know what? As you know, as running back averse as I typically tend to be, I'm gonna have to go with Chubb and Samuel here. I love Kittle, don't get me wrong, but I'm a little worried about that quarterback transition with, you know, from Garoppolo to Lance, or even if Lance, you know, comes out and starts. I mean, with that rushing upside, it's going to cap the targets in that offense. You know, and I think just Debo, just by virtue of, you know, his ADOT, you know, sitting on the line and using that yak to make his bones. I like Debo as more of a weapon, you know, for Lance than I do almost Kittle. I think, you know, there's going to be targets in that offense, but I think Kittle's going to come down a little bit. I think Ayuk is obviously going to be that deep shot guy, but I think Deebo Samuel has just gone, you know, he's being valued way too low. And then by extension, I have an Ayuk jersey literally right behind me, so I can't really talk that much, but I think Ayuk is kind of going a little bit too high as well. So I think there's some normalization that can come between the two of them. Deebo Samuel, and then Nick Chubb. You know, if you're contending, I think you know Nick Chubb is fantastic running back. I don't think you can really go wrong with him. So I would take Chubb and Samuel over Kittle. That's very even for me, but I think I would take the two over the one.
Yeah, I'm taking Kittle. I'm doing that. So when I can plug
in, to expand, Justin.
I mean, when I can plug in one of the top two tight ends in the league on a week to week basis, and don't have to worry about that position at all. Give me that. That's money in the bank. Even if his targets drop and he gets down to, 125 instead of 150, you know, 140, he's still going to be catching just a crap ton of balls. I edited myself there. Rush, you're welcome. So you don't have to jump in here and delete bad words. But, I still think that his floor is 80 catches. You know, and 80 catches in a 1.75 is massive.
Yeah, I mean, if he can stay healthy.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, but I am one of those guys that also kind of undervalues Deebo, because I think it is Kittle's the primary target in that offense. I was fairly impressed with what I saw by Ayuk. I do agree with you, Kevin. I think he's being a bit overrated because most of what he did was without Deebo and Kittle when he had the really good games. So, this one's a tough one for me because I do love Chubb, but I think I lean the Kittle side just because I'm a big elite tight end guy. I just think it gives you such an advantage, mm-hmm. especially with the 1.75 premium. But even with a lesser premium, I'm generally a guy who likes to grab one of those top three guys if I can get them. I just think it gives you a week-to-week advantage. So yep. I will side with Kittle on this one as well. But I do agree. I think what Kevin said was right. I think it's a pretty even trade. It's just depending, you know, what you need and what you're looking for. I don't know why you'd have Kittle in this case, but if you're generally a guy who doesn't worry about getting elite tight ends, I could definitely see selling off Kittle for this. So let's get to the last trade, and then we can get to some listener questions. This last one is a five-player trade, also from TA5. Sam Darnold, Kenny Galladay, Nyheim Hines for Jalen Hurts and Adam Thielen. So what do you think, Justin?
Well, I'll get into Kenny Galladay first. He just took a massive downgrade at quarterback by moving from the Lions to the Giants. I mean, Daniel Jones is not it, in my opinion. And I don't know how I feel about Sam Darnold. I really don't. Like, this is his last chance. This is his last chance, or he's a career backup, you know, journeyman kind of guy. So I'll take the Jalen Hurts, Adam Thielen side, where – and I don't know if Jalen Hurts is the guy or not, but at least I'm going to get this year of production, and it's going to be, in my opinion, high-end fantasy production. So if they don't win games, he could be replaced next year, but I think that I'll take the points and worry about everything else later, because I don't know how much longevity Sam Darnold has. I don't know if Hines is worth anything now, much less in a year, you know, so I'm not worried about Adam Thielen's age either.
Yeah, this is a weird trade to me. There's like almost all these guys are probably going to take a downtick in value. Hurts is the one guy that probably has the most upside, that if he keeps the job, could he, even though he's valued fairly highly now, could get a boost in value. And I'm with you. I'm not sure what to make of Darnold either. I'm somewhat optimistic on him. I am a fan of Joe Brady there in Carolina. Teddy Bridgewater himself didn't have a great year last year, but he did manage to produce an offense where DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, and Robbie Anderson all produced, with somehow Teddy not having a great fantasy season. But I'm very worried about Hurts and his prospects beyond this year, but I still think I lean that side. Just because, yeah, I think Thielen gives you another solid year. He's obviously going to be on the decline shortly. Hopefully that doesn't start this year. But there's not much else. It's a pretty limited target tree there with just him and Jefferson and Irv and not much else. I guess Dalvin. Mm-hmm. But Yeah, so I mean, Hurts definitely. I mean, Hurt. There's a scenario certainly where Hurts could just blow away Sam Darnold in terms of points this year, even if he doesn't. And there's no guarantee either has a job next year, I think. So
right. That's
why I think I lean the Hurts side. If this was a more stable quarterback that also had some upside, I might lean that side. But I think I go with Hurts and Thielen. What do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm going to go with that side, too. I mean, Darnold, we don't know what's going to happen after this year. Galladay just got into a really muddy situation with, you know, Daniel Jones and then all those pass catchers there where you paid him all that money. But, I mean, I haven't drafted him anywhere, and I'm not going to. Nyheim Hines, I mean, he has a specialized role, but it's a very high, you know, high floor, low ceiling role. Give me Jalen Hurts, who, if he just balls out, and he doesn't have to even be good to ball out in fantasy. That's the thing.
Right.
You can always just flip him right after. And then Thielen, remember, he got a late start to his career. I mean, he was a full-time starter, I believe, at 26 years old. So, you know, I don't think the age thing is really a concern for me right now. So, yeah, like Justin said, take those two guys and then worry about it later.
Right, and I do kind of like Nyheim Hines a little bit. I just wanted to mention that before we move on. I think you kind of said it. He's a hot. I think he has a decent floor. He's a guy that you can throw in and he'll probably get you 10 points. He just doesn't have the ceiling that you're looking for. But I think he's a nice guy, especially if you're in a league. Trade Addicts only as 10, which is somewhat deep, but especially if you have more than 10 starters, I love him as a guy you can kind of throw in your lineup and start every week and still expect to get 10 and an occasional 20-point spike week. So just wanted to throw that in there, but I still take the Hurts side.
Yeah.
We got a nice handful of listener questions here, partially because we didn't get to them all last week. So, but I did one I saw coming at the last minute in our tweet. Before I came on I was told to ask Kevin about his Robert Tonyan love.
Oh man. Yeah. For the fantasy besties, we stream on Monday with Linda Cooper and Jordan Loop and JB, but yeah. Tonyan as a Packer fan, you know, I've kind of shunned my Packer fandom on that one. I mean, to do what he did with 59 targets,
yes.
I mean, and he might not, who knows, he might not even get Aaron Rodgers back. So, you know, I am completely off on him. I like him better in best ball. You'll get his couple spike weeks, you know, if he gets him. But keep in mind, you know, that big game that he had against Atlanta was against their fifth and sixth string safeties where he had 3 touchdowns. So, you know, say what you want about Tonyan. And then you've also got Josiah DeGuara, who got hurt, but they wanted to use him more. They have Jay Sternberger there. Now they have Amari Rodgers. Now, you know, always had Davante Adams. There's just, I don't know if he can be that top two guy. And that's what I look for in tight ends. I want a top two guy in a target share in an offense. And I don't think that he can do that. I mean, certainly propped up by touchdowns. And, you know, if you take away those touchdowns and kind of normalize it, he was Tyler Eifert last season.
Yeah. And you can go, Justin.
But just, I'm so glad that a Packers fan is not like wearing the rose colored glasses here, because 59 targets is not enough. It's just not.
I mean, no,
it's 52 of 59. That's just, there's nothing repeatable about this.
Yeah, was he even? I mean, he probably wasn't even top two in targets on that team last year, was he?
No,
Aaron Jones was number two.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, you're looking, I think he was one of 6 tight ends to have that low. I think it was under like 85 targets, you know, to finish top 5 in fantasy with that, you know, and it was like Gronkowski, Gates. And like a couple other, I mean, he's nowhere near that. I mean, Tonyan, that is just the product of the uber efficiency of Aaron Rodgers, who had the highest touchdown rate of his career, even better than at 2011. So you really think that at almost 38 years old, Aaron Rodgers is going to repeat a 9.1 touchdown rate?
Yeah.
Right. And that's the point I was going to say when we both tried to chime in at the same time, was just that we know touchdowns are not sticky on a play, especially for receiving touchdowns are not sticky from year to year. For maybe for Davante Adams, but 95% of players, they're not. So, right. And like you said, Rodgers, what is the word out there? Do you guys think Rodgers is going to be back?
Who knows? I mean, it's funny because, you know, I tend to stay away from a lot of the talk and stuff like that. And like, you know, Skip Bayless and call, you know, those shock jocks basically of sports. Yeah. But Colin Coward actually made a good point about Russell Wilson. You know, we heard about Russell Wilson, you know, being in that Super Bowl booth and, you know, getting kind of ticked off about, you know, that whole trade stuff in the offseason. But Seattle kind of, they got to the table and kind of talked it out. And Rodgers can't even get a meeting with Gutekunst and Mark Murphy right now. So, I mean, he's busy being in Hawaii and hosting Jeopardy and doing whatever the hell he wants.
Hanging out with Miles Teller.
Right. I mean, you do you, but at some point, people are making a big deal about OTAs and, oh, Rodgers is not at OTAs. So he's 37 years old. You really expect him to, you know, waste reps there? Come on. Neither were his top five receivers. They weren't there either. So yeah. I think just way too much about nothing. I think Rodgers will be back in Green Bay. I think they're going to find a way to kind of smooth that over. But, you know, and this is somebody who I hated that Jordan Love pick. I think it was absolutely asinine. But I think Rodgers is there for one more year, and then they're going to just do the Jordan Love thing and see what comes of that.
I kind of feel the same way. So
yeah, I tend to think this is kind of overblown, just like the Russell Wilson thing was, and then he'll be back. They'll figure it out. And it's funny, you hated the Jordan Love pick. I hated the Jalen Hurts pick that same draft, and now look, he's my starting quarterback. But I'm as an Eagles fan. But
yeah.
But we didn't have Aaron Rodgers. We had a crybaby who couldn't deal with a decent backup being drafted. So
yeah, that's what we happened. Got New York City bodega Patrick Mahomes and Jordan Love. That's what we've got. If you got Patrick Mahomes on wish.com, like that. That's Jordan Love.
I love that. Okay, so we'll move on to some of the other questions. Like I said, we have some that we had last week. Two of them. Kind of connected, so I'll go to them first. First from at JFry80 on Twitter, a 12-team Superflex, I assume this is tight end premium, it just says tight end premium. In two of my leagues, a team with only one starting quarterback drafted Pitts at the 103. Is this crazy or justified, Justin? I'll ask you first as the Atlanta fan.
I like Pitts a lot, but that's crazy. That's crazy. Unless they're just punting for one more year. Like, if they're just saying, you know what, I'm punting one more year, I'll get my QB in 2022 because I want the elite, you know, positional player here. That I can understand. Maybe they have a bunch of 2022 picks or they're planning on, you know, pushing and grabbing a couple more or whatever. But if this is just like, okay, I have a good roster, I have one QB, and let me take Kyle Pitts at the 103, I don't know what to tell you. You just gave up, like, 7-8 points a week at a quarterback spot to some positional player down the road. Your 10th positional player on your roster is never going to score what a QB would. It's just not going to happen.
Here's the one counterpoint I will make that I thought of when I looked at this. With how insane, which we're actually going to get into in a minute, but how insane Kyle Pitts' value is right now, could you not flip him for – Not Trey Lance or Justin Fields, but could you flip him for a quarterback now? Could you flip him for Kirk Cousins plus or somebody in that second tier range plus, and maybe that's what they're thinking?
Well, yeah, but then you just took a hit at quarterback because you could have had already just one of those two guys, Fields or Lance, whoever's available. Instead, you're going Cousins plus. Well, you could have traded Lance or Fields for Cousins plus if that was your move, you know?
That's true. That's true. I just, yeah, people, I just feel people are dying to get to Kyle Pitts that you could, I guess maybe you, it depends on the owner. You probably could get more for Lance or Fields. You should be able to get more for Lance or Fields.
Yeah. The hype is still high. You know, the hype for both those guys is still pretty dang high.
Definitely. You know, so Kevin, what do you think?
You better be damn stacked, you know, elsewhere if you're going to be taking Pitts over a quarterback. So I think that's pretty crazy, honestly. I think, you know, and we all love Kyle Pitts. I mean, you know, you say what you want about dude being a unicorn, but I mean, geez. And it's funny because I was actually thinking about Kirk Cousins and like thinking like maybe like a Hockenson or something like that. Maybe that's a little too much, but, you know, being able to flip him. But yeah, why not just take Lance or Fields at that point? So yeah, I think it's kind of crazy. I mean, unless your roster is a unicorn where you can go with one quarterback, which 99% of the time it's not, but yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. And I am actually with you guys. I would not just based on value, like Justin said, I would take quarterback with the top three. I'd be fine taking Pitts at four, even if you only have one quarterback, because I kind of hate Zach Wilson. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I'm not taking him at 104. And no one's taking Max Jones at 104. So I wouldn't have a problem taking him at four, even if I only have one quarterback. I don't want to draft a guy just because I think I need a quarterback. So, but I'm with you guys. I'd be taking Lawrence Fields, Lance, before I even think about Pitts. Yep. Despite being the guy who hates QBs, as Justin likes to say. But
you just hate other QBs. That's what it is. You just hate good QBs. That's what it is.
I don't hate them. I hate their value. It's too high. but anyway, the other question was also Kyle Pitts related that I wanted to get into, which is from the Spot Pod. How much higher can the stock for Kyle Pitts go? Like, could he go top five in tight end premium next year if he smashes this season? What do you think, Kevin?
He's already there right now. I'm looking at DLF's May ADP.
I think he means overall.
Overall? I mean,
because, yeah he's already tight end 4 or 3, I think, in DLF ADP.
Yeah, he's 3, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, but yeah, as far as top five, yeah, absolutely, 100%. He can be tight end 1 if he really, you know, but I just don't think it's going to happen this year. I mean, with, you know, what's going on in Atlanta, whether they trade Julio or whatever the case may be, but, you know, Kyle Pitts is just so overblown right now. He's one of the biggest trade ships and, you know, people are just clamoring to get him. So if you can capitalize and just flip him for just the moon, you know, I'd say just do it, but his stock can absolutely go high. He can go as high as the moon.
Justin, yeah. You think he can go into top five overall range if he smashes this season? Was his
okay, so here's the thing. We have to define smash, because I don't think 55 and 707 is smashing. I think that's what kind of people expect. But if he hits 75 or 80 and 1,000, yeah, he could be top five. I think so.
That's what I think.
You know, I mean, it has to be a smash. It has to be 1,000 yards or somewhere in that range, just like best rookie tight end ever for him to jump into the top five of startups.
But, right. That's where I'm at. I think his value is so high right now that if he actually comes through to that extent, he will easily be going in the first round and possibly even top five in tight end premium startups. I think even if he does what you said, we could see him sneak into the first end of the first round, early second, if he's like, 55, 708 or something like that.
He's tied in 1 next year if he hits those kind of numbers, because everyone's just going to project him to, you know, just get better. And
right. Like if he has just like a tight end 6 to 8 season, just because we don't expect much from rookie tight ends anyway, that'll be viewed not quite as a smash, but as a definitely a huge success for him to start off that well. Okay, so let's this one guy has a bunch of questions here. I'll get he's got like a 3-question question. So at the Chuck Stick, who are the best non-starter QBs to target? Who should I be paying in, I guess, what should I be paying in Superflex? So I think he means, I think I asked last week, and he meant non-NFL starting quarterback. So I guess he's thinking like going the Tannehill route or something like that. I'm not sure. But is there any non-starter QBs that either of you like to target, and how much would you pay for them?
Man, I don't know.
Yeah, that's tough because there's so much ambiguity with some of these quarterback rooms that, you know, there's always a chance, you know, that – Sean Payton could say, you know what, screw it, we're going to go with Taysom Hill. But, you know, that's the thing. There's, with that ambiguity, it's a hard question. I will admit that. I mean, I would love, if this, you know, I love the same Mariota, but that ship has sailed.
Taysom Hill is a guy that sprang to mind for me because I don't consider him. I know some people do think he's still going to start. I mean, I think it's kind of 60-40 about who it might be, but I think it's 60 on the Jameis side. Another guy, not that I expect huge long-term success from, that I've picked up in some startups is Taylor Heineke. just because I'm not sure what Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to do this year for sure. We all love Fitzmagic, but I could definitely see a scenario where he throws like six interceptions in two games and they bench him, and Heineke's the starter for possibly the rest of the year if he plays well. He did show out pretty well in the playoff game last year. I'm having trouble coming up with many other guys though, that I can think of that. The only other thing I sometimes do as part of my general superflex strategy, I do like to get some of the backups on good offenses, even if they're not that good. I have some Chad Henne shares and things like that. But I don't expect him ever to be somebody you're like a Tannehill who's going to come in and eventually be a starter or something like that. We've seen the Chad Henne show and it was not good. So
I mean, yeah. you could say guys like Tyrod Taylor. Because you know what's going on in Houston. That's someone that could be a starter. You could say Drew Locke, you know, because Teddy Bridgewater is going to take that job. So,
hell, even Mason Rudolph, who Ben Roethlisberger can't throw, you know, 5 yards downfield. I mean,
is Mason, you know, the backup or is Dwayne Haskins the backup?
That could go either way, too. That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, they got Josh Dobbs back, too.
Right. Oh, there you go. So the only problem with this is that every year there's this influx of quarterbacks now. And so these backups, it's not like they have opportunities to take jobs. You know, the only reason Tannehill got the job was because Mariota sucked worse. And so Tannehill got in there and then blew up, you know, turned his career around. But it's not like these guys are just like, okay, well, I'm a backup and now I'm a starter, you know. Andy Dalton signed with the Bears, and then what they do? Oh, yeah, QB1. You know, they're tweeting that out, and a month later they're drafting Justin Fields in the first round, trading up for him, et cetera. So, you know, these backup QBs, there's just not the opportunity there might have been back in the past because everyone wants the new shiny toy.
Yeah, I agree with you. I guess, yeah, I can't think of anybody else that I would deal with the top of my head. And the second question he has, like I said, he has like three different questions here. What is the value on T. Higgins and James Robinson? Should I hold? I got some thoughts on James Robinson, but I'll let you guys answer on T. Higgins first. Justin, what are your thoughts on Russ's boy T?
I think you kind of have to hold because the market has died on him. I mean, he's probably still the wide receiver too in that offense. I think Tyler Boyd takes a little bump back. But I think there's enough to go around. If the passing volume is like what it was last year, you know, and Joe Burrow is throwing 40 times a game or 44 times a game or whatever, there's enough, you know, to feed everybody. So I don't think we expect, you know, wide receiver one season out of him anytime soon. But wide receiver two-ish, sure.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think his ceiling is capped now by Chase, whereas before I think we could imagine a scenario where he was a wide receiver one, maybe year after year as the top option. But, Kevin, what do you think?
I mean, as an you know, I love T. Higgins to death, but I think he's more wide receiver two right now. I mean, you know, we saw, you know, when Burrow was throwing to Higgins, I mean, he was right up there as far as per game stuff with he was right behind Justin Jefferson. And if Burrow hadn't gotten hurt, we'd be talking about him, you know, in maybe that border. And who knows if they would have drafted Chase. That's the crazy thing. So, you know, I think Higgins right now is a solid, you know, wide receiver two. And Burrow's just going to prop up that offense. If they could be the Dallas Cowboys of the AFC where they have a crap defense and be able to throw the ball 625 times, I mean, that's only going to prop everybody up. And I think, you know, we saw last year with Dusty A.J. Green getting 100 targets, you know, and now you got Chase who – and that's one thing, too, that is Chase going to just come in day one and expect a 22-23% target share? I don't think so, not right off the bat, but – I think he's going to work his way in, and I think it's just going to be fruitful for everybody in that offense. So I still hold T. Higgins in very high regard. But realistically, if you're trying to put a value on him, he's probably a mid-wide receiver too. You know, he can flirt with that the kind of fringy wide receiver one, you know, based on, you know, the strides that defense makes. Because if the defense is terrible, you know, like it's been, they're going to have to throw the ball all the time.
Yeah, I don't have much to add on Higgins. I agree with what you both have said. So I'll get into my James Robinson. I've been pretty vocal that I'm down on ETN. I think Robinson is going to be the lead back there or anything. I just think the presence of Robinson, the both of them being there caps the ceiling of both. And I think a lot of people are acting like James Robinson is dead, and he's not dead. He's still a good football player. And I don't think that you can – everyone thinks because they drafted him in the first round, he's just going to take over. And I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case. I think if the guy performs well, they're going to keep it a fairly even split. I could see him getting the goal line touches, assuming Tebow isn't Taysom Hill. And he's not a bad pass catcher in his own right. So I could see him getting – he's not – ETN's almost certainly going to be the guy that's in there on passing downs. But he could still get some receiving work on first and second down. Just because it's first and second down doesn't mean you can't catch a pass. So I see James Robinson – I put it out on Twitter, I think, like a week or two ago, that James Robinson will outscore ETN this year. ETN's definitely got more long-term value, but I still like James Robinson. And he's definitely a hold for me. I don't think you're going to get – the value he'd have in your lineup if you sell him. Not that he's going to be an RB1 like last year, but I think he's definitely a solid RB2 this season. And like I said, I think he outscores ETN. So how wrong do you guys think I am?
I don't know if he outscores ETN, because I think that ETN is going to get a lot of passing work. But I think that the carries will be about split. Maybe James Robinson with a slight lead in the early down carries. I mean, he's a hold. Robinson's a hold for me. I still like the kid, and hopefully he gets a shot. If something the biggest reason he's a hold is because if something happens to ETN, he's back to being an RB1. You're rocking out a top five, top eight running back every week. So, I mean, the ceiling is there still, and there's just no value in selling right now.
And I can tell you, in the community, he seems to be a hold. I did a little experiment after I put that tweet out, and I sent a second for James Robinson in at least 12 to 15 leagues and only got one accept. So it doesn't seem like anybody's even selling him for a random second, save one guy. So, but Kev, any thoughts on James Robinson before we move on to the next question?
It's funny. I actually put a tweet out earlier in the month about the parallels between the Jaguars running back room and the Detroit Lions last year, where Daryl Bevel is there for the Jaguars this year. I mean, ETN being the lower end Swift, James Robinson being Kerryon Johnson, and Dusty Carlos Hyde being Adrian Peterson, and then Bevel is still Bevel. So, you know, I could totally see that kind of scenario playing out, where I don't think ETN has the upside of a DeAndre Swift, but I think that kind of comes together a little bit more between ETN and Robinson, and it's almost a pick 'em as far as, you know, fantasy points between those two. So I mean, I'm holding him for now. I got him in one. I actually traded him last year for I traded him at the hype of Robinson. I traded him for AJ Dillon and Laviska Shenault. So I don't hate it, but I kind of wish I'd held out on that, but maybe now I'm not feeling so bad about it. But yeah, there's a lot of parallels, I think, between that backfield and the Lions backfield the last year, where it just may not be fruitful unless one guy really takes over. Like you said, somebody gets hurt.
Oh. Yeah, that's the play, I think, is if ETN does get hurt at any point, that's when you sell James Robinson, because his value will never be higher again than it is at that point. So, and this last question from at the Chuck, all three of these were from at the Chuck Stick on Twitter, seems to be directly targeted to me almost, I feel. how bad should my QB room look in Superflex before I need, and then he puts in capital letters, need to sell some of my running backs, tight ends, and wide receivers for QBs? As I have Fitz, Stafford, and Jimmy, I assume that's Jimmy G as of right now. So that's getting to the point that you need to start. I wouldn't be selling high-end guys, as we know. That's not my thing. But you can get, you know, a Matt Ryan, a Kirk Cousins, a Daniel Jones for pretty cheap still. Especially, it depends on what, you know, who owns those guys in your league. If you have a rebuilding team that owns maybe one of those guys, if you have a guy who has four quarterbacks, which you target those teams, If a rebuilding team happens to have an older guy, or if they a team has four quarterbacks, and they'll move one without getting one back, those are the teams you want to look at and try and get them cheaper. Like I said, I've gotten guys cheap during this offseason. I got Ryan for like Zach Moss and Tony Pollard or something like that, which to me is not a big price. Yeah. I think Jamison Crowder was thrown in there. So I definitely think you are at that point. I would not feel comfortable, even myself, with Fitz Stafford and Jimmy Garoppolo. what do you think, guys? At what point do you – I mean, I guess this is the point, but is there anything you want to expand on here besides just saying, yes, you need to do it?
Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, just go get somebody. I mean, come on. You're doing yourself a disservice there. I mean, that's just I have to hold my nose.
Yeah, I mean, basically, as you go, Justin.
I got to have I like quarterbacks. Unlike Rocky, I actually like quarterbacks. I think they're a valuable piece in Superflex. And, that's not going to do it for me. Man, I keep looking down at this going, is that changing? Is that really what I'm really hearing that and reading that still the same? Yeah, I'd try to move a first for Kirk Cousins or something like that. Assuming that you have the talent at other positions and you're looking at a late-ish first, I'd try to move that. And I think that might get it done. You know, Kirk Cousins is so undervalued that, you know, you might just be able to grab that. And then you have Stafford and Kirk Cousins. I feel okay about that.
And that's what I was going to say. I think the point where you have to start doing that is when you have only one quarterback, you can't even feel sure that the other two guys make it through this year, let alone beyond this year. If you're not sure two guys of the three can make it through this year, that is the point where you need to start trading something to get another quarterback. That's where I'm at as well, even though, I don't value them as highly as Justin. That's exactly – if you had two – and exactly like he said, if you already had Stafford or Cousins, I'd be fine running into the season with that. And then if you need to add a third – things aren't going well, then maybe you add a Fitz type in the season or something like that for buys or things like that. But as long as you have two solid ones, I'm okay with that. If you don't want to move your other positional players, would you guys agree with that? Or do you always want to have three?
I kind of always want to have three.
I mean, I prefer three.
But it makes you feel all warm and fuzzy inside, wouldn't you?
Well, the last thing you want to do is have somebody get injured and then they know you need a quarterback, because then things get escalated. I'd rather buy a quarterback now in the offseason when nobody's thinking about, okay, well, I have four quarterbacks and I can control this, or I have five quarterbacks. Unless you're in a league with Hogue, then you're going to get, raked over the coals anyway. But as it is, like, I'm going to go and try and squeeze a quarterback out of somebody right now, always. Because I want that third quarterback, because there is nothing worse than having one quarterback that you can start and you're a contender and someone goes, yeah, I'll take your next two first for Matt Ryan. And you're like,
And see, that's
why I wish I hadn't taken Kyle Pitts.
Yeah,
exactly. Way to bring it back, Kevin. And that's why I do like to go in with three, especially with the way I do play it, because you're not raking me over the coals. I'd rather go with one quarterback than pay two first for a quarterback who doesn't deserve to, like Matt Ryan, who doesn't deserve two first. I'm not doing that. I'll blow it up before I pay two first for Matt Ryan. So
the other direction, yeah.
Yeah. So I'd rather. That's why I do try and go in. Like I said, with the way I play it, where I don't generally have the higher end guys, I always want three if I can make it work because of that reason. So that A, someone can't, try and rake me over the coals, even though I probably won't pay it after losing a guy. And B, just because when you don't have the Kyler or the Dak or whoever you can put in there every week, I like having three guys to choose from that I can mix and match every week, because there's definitely going to be weeks where at least one of the guys does not have a good matchup. So yeah, I think the point where you have to start selling guy other positions is definitely this point where you have one quarterback who you can feel good about even this year and nothing beyond that. So I think we answered that question pretty well. We'll move on to another one here. From @RamKlim, RamKlim on Twitter. Player whose value you don't agree with the most. Kevin.
Just any player that
that's what Ellie said. Player. So any position, anybody you want to go with. if you think they're too high, too low, you've got tons of freedom here. So players' value you don't agree with the most.
Oh, geez. I got to find a soliloquy here to go on. But I guess if I had to pick one, I think I might go J.K. Dobbins, just because I don't think the upside is that really ever going to be there, where Lamar Jackson is the RB1 in that offense, and they're always going to have running backs for him to play off of. There's not much receiving work to be had as far as for the running backs, where you're being able to get upside. So J.K. Dobbins is a guy that I've drafted and flipped. I have no J.K. Dobbins anywhere, and I'm fully okay with that. Give me the cheaper option where I know Gus Edwards is going to be worked in. The dude's going to have, 125, 130 carries, possibly upwards. I just don't think that outside of getting double-digit touchdowns, J.K. Dobbins is going to do much for me. And with the Ravens just running up time of possession and running the ball. And who knows, that maybe they decide to pass the ball now that they drafted Bateman and Wallace and, have, those options there. Who knows? So it's a lot of factors working against J.K. Dobbins. I'm out.
Any thoughts on Dobbins, Justin?
I have Dobbins. I have one share of Dobbins, and it's a contending team. And I'll tell you right now, I tried to flip him early, in the rookie draft, when Najee was on the clock, and I was like, man, and, when Najee was available, every time I wanted to, because I figured I could get the volume out of Najee that I may not get out of Dobbins. What is his real ceiling? 215 carries and 40 targets max, 30 catches, something like that. It's fine if he converts at the same efficiency he had last year. He'll end up being like RB 11 to 13, somewhere in that range, which is fine. But that's his ceiling, And if his floor is 175 catches and 35 targets, then we're in trouble, for the cost that he is right now.
And I agree. I've been preaching caution on Dobbins as well, Kevin, for all the reasons you said. And he's, we all know he's not going to get a lot of passing game work as well. I will say, though, he is looking at the ADP RB12, which I don't think is awful. Just because I think there is a scenario where he could be very efficient if that Ravens offense is scoring touchdowns, especially like they did a couple years ago. I can see him being the guy that's going to get a lot of them. But at RB12, I don't think he's horribly priced. I'm curious. Maybe we can play a little bit of the ADP game here.
I'm on it right now and looking at it as far as the May Superflex ADP.
Yeah, so Dobbins or Joe Mixon at RB13. Who are you going with?
Mixon.
Me too.
Justin?
Me too. Mixon?
Okay, Dobbins or Zeke?
Zeke.
Yeah, I definitely agree on Zeke. I think Zeke's too low here, actually. And then Dobbins or Najee. I'm going Najee all day.
That's easy for me.
Yeah, the volume Najee. Is just there. The only negative is that offensive line, but you could definitely overcome that. Let's see how far we go here then. Dobbins or Gibson?
I'm taking Gibson. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm not a Gibson believer. I think it's the same situation, but Dobbins is a better player.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I'd go one lower than that too.
And CEH.
I'd take CEH over him. Absolutely. I think he's I think he's the post hype, from last year. Right now, I think he's in a much better situation than he was last year. And, I think he's going kind of lower than he should be right now, too. I think he's a fringe, top 12 running back right now.
Yeah, I hear you on CEH. What's the thing that people always say? You don't hate the player, you hate the ADP. I hated CEH at his ADP last year. I think he's definitely a buy where he is now. He's a guy that I can definitely see him finishing in that RB11 to 13 range. But Justin, CEH or Dobbins?
I'm going to take Dobbins.
And I think that, let me see. I think that's probably at the point then where we're taking Dobbins over most of these guys.
Sanders. I did try to trade for CEH, and Scott Sidlow just ignored me. I felt total. It hurt me.
That's Sidlow. He's
like, no, I'm going to think about it. And I just started sending him memes like, hey, I'm lonely over here. Hey, I got candy in this van. Hop in.
SpongeBob with a cup of coffee in the black and white.
And then I had to change it. It was post auction, so, and there was some auction money, but I had to revoke it because I'm the commissioner, and I had to transition into off season stuff with blind bid money. So I was like, well, I'll deal with this later.
I'm curious. The guy directly ahead of Dobbins is Eckler. Would you guys want Eckler or Dobbins?
Go ahead, Kevin.
I think that's more of a decision right there. I mean, if you can foresee Eckler, yeah, he got his money and, you know, he's got a couple of years of security. I think that's more of a coin flip for me. I think Eckler might be a little high at RB11. I don't know, man. I think I'd still take Eckler, but it's close.
I'm out on Eckler.
Yeah, I think I go Dobbins as well there. I'm not out on Eckler, but I do like the Dobbins upside. He's younger, all that stuff. So I'm surprised Eckler was at 11 above Dobbins at RB12. I think Dobbins' value and trade value is significantly higher than Eckler. So
I agree.
Yeah. So the next question. We still have to get mine and Justin's. What am I talking about? My guy is also a running back. I've said it multiple times. Cam Akers. I think he's severely overrated. He's higher up even than Dobbins. Basically, everything he did last year was at the end of the season, which makes everybody love him even more, I think, and also we did in the playoffs. I think we've learned nothing from Sony Michel a few years ago, who did the same kind of thing where he went off in the playoffs and everybody loved him. I think Daryl Henderson is still there. I think he was hurt when this all happened last year. Even when he was in the lineup, I think he was still banged up. I love the Akers talent. I did like him coming out. I just think people are valuing way too high at this point. Are you guys Akers believers?
Probably not too high on Akers, as far as I'm not going to go out of my way to go get him. But, you know, there's always that looming timeshare where, you know, it could be Daryl Henderson working his way in and just frustrating the hell out of people. So, you know, at that point, and what's he right now in DLF? He's RB8. I mean, that just is too rich for me.
See, I still like Akers. I don't know. There's this, like, really diluted area in that RB7 to 12, 14 range where it could interchange in a whole bunch of different directions. Yeah. But for me, I like Akers. I like the volume because I don't think that Henderson is much of a threat. And Malcolm Brown is gone now. So that's a boost for volume there. And like Rocky said just a few minutes ago, Stafford is going to elevate the whole offense. You know, I mean, as much as I want to say that Jared Goff is a fine quarterback, Stafford is another level completely. So to me, that's where I go with Akers. I'll still buy him at that cost, because I think that's about where I think he should be anyway. You know, if I can get someone that's not going to try and get me to pay for top five cost for him, then sure.
I'm looking at the ADP right now. I mean, I'm looking, Akers is 8, Chubb is 9. I mean, Aaron Jones, I mean, I guess a little bit of my homerism will come out here just because I know the dude has security. And you know, if he can take some of that passing work that Jamal Williams had, doesn't have to spell him, although he will get Dylan, but Dylan ain't going to take that passing work. I'll take Aaron Jones right in lockstep with Akers there. But yeah, all fair points on Akers. I'm just unsure, but Stafford, you know, rising tide lifts all boats. I mean, Stafford is just a world of difference between Goff. Goff, you know, his play action is just non-existent. Stafford, you know, he has a 3-yard difference between him and Goff in air yards, you know, downfield. So, I mean, give me that all day, and that's only going to help Akers. You know, and the line's not great, but he's good enough. I mean, he had a crap line in Florida State too.
Gotcha. How about who would you prefer, Henry or Akers? Derek Henry or Cam Akers?
Probably take Akers. I mean, he's what, 6 years older or six
right,
years?
Exactly. He's ancient in running back years. Yeah. I was just curious because, I mean, I feel like Henry is being severely overvalued. But my guy that's overvalued, and I'm about to ruffle some feathers around here from listeners, is Russell Wilson. I can't. The problem with Russell, and if you play in best ball, awesome. Welcome to W's. But if you have to stick him in the lineup every week, there's weeks where he literally will cost you weeks because you expected 20, 22, 24 points and you get 9 or 10. I mean, that's rough out of your super flex spot, if, especially if he's your QB1, where now you expect your QB1 to give you that and you have a Baker Mayfield or something. So now you're getting 20, 25 points total out of your two spots. That's rough. So to me, he is completely overvalued.
Yeah. I mean, I just do absolute ton of best ball. I mean, that's pretty much what I do primarily is best ball. And yeah, Russell Wilson, just if you could stack him with, you know, Metcalf, Lockett, or even both, I mean, you're loving life. But yeah, Russell Wilson can kill you. I mean, if the, you know, the whole Russ can cook, if Carroll takes away that cookbook, you're left holding the bag with Russell Wilson. I mean, we saw it at the midway point up to the end of last season, where, and now, do they want to run the ball? Do they want to do all that? Now we have a little bit of an ambiguity and why Russell Wilson was pissed off in the offseason. I was pissed off as a guy can be, I guess. It's Russell Wilson. But yeah, I mean, I would still, there's guys I'll take, certainly in best ball. Like, you know, I'll take Herbert. I'll take Burrow over him in best ball, you know, and just the seasonal. I mean, give me that all day. Just, I think there's way more potential for offensive explosion with the Bengals than I do with the Seahawks.
Yeah, I like that call on Russell Wilson. I think, like Kevin was sort of saying, that with his complaining in the offseason, I think we might see a repeat of last year where it seems like they're letting Russ cook early on, and then Pete Carroll's going to be Pete Carroll, and come playoff time, fantasy playoff time, we're gonna see Russ put up those 9 burgers, 10 burgers.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like that call as well. Okay, we got a few more here. We'll try and finish up before we sign off. I guess we sort of talked about this a little bit, but at Dynasty Simba asked for most realistic Aaron Rodgers trade scenarios. Is there anything specific that they're talking about? Like, are they expecting to get Drew Locke back? Are they expecting to get Surtain in a deal? What are they looking at? Do you have any idea, Kevin?
I mean, good Lord, I've seen some bad beat writers and stuff talking about, you know, potential trade scenarios, and they're just so. You're talking about a guy who's almost 38 years old, and I saw one that, you know, involved trading Rodgers and Davante Adams for like 3 firsts, 2 seconds, you know. Drew Lock, Surtain, Jerry Jeudy, like, come on, this isn't Madden. Like, you can't right. just, it's absolutely asinine. I don't know if there's a realistic one, honestly, because I think if there was one that was gonna, you know, be fruitful, it would have happened before the draft. Now, you know, guys are set now. So that's why I don't think there's a realistic one right now, because I think teams are set right now. I know, you know, who knows what happens with Deshaun Watson, that whole thing. But I think teams are just set right now on quarterback. I think Green Bay's real move is to patch it up with Rodgers and just go for one more season with the roster they have.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I wasn't sure if you were going to say something. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's what I think. I mean, I think if they were to do it, if they were to somehow work something, I think Locke would probably have to come back. I don't know how much. I would assume that Packers fans wouldn't love that either, but I don't know that Jordan Love is ready to start either. So
I'd rather have Doug Peterson at quarterback than Drew Locke.
Hey, he's only in his early 50s. Maybe he could still lace him up. So
he probably could. He probably could throw farther than Roethlisberger right now.
Oh, man.
But I am same with you. I have trouble seeing much in the way of realistic scenarios. I mean, I guess it could happen with Denver because they could send a quote-unquote young quarterback back, even though we all agree he's probably crap.
But, I don't know why the Packers would like Teddy Bridgewater, though. Doesn't make much sense.
No, it really doesn't make sense. If you're going to deal him, just go with Love. I mean, that's the thing. Let him take his lumps. I mean, you've already sat him and pretty much redshirted him for a year. And that's the one thing. I mean, granted, the whole Jordan Love thing was based on, we don't know if Aaron Rodgers can get back to MVP level, and now he can, and now they have Rodgers, and now they have Love, where now you're just ticking the clock on the rookie contract, and that's the most valuable asset a team has in this day and age of the NFL, is that flexibility you have when you have a rookie quarterback on his rookie contract. And now basically they're just ticking years off, and then they have to make a decision. So that's why, for that, the sooner the better. I mean, that might have worked in 2006 where you could take a quarterback and let him sit. And I'll just say, you know, Mahomes, different situation. He had Alex Smith, they were a playoff team. Lamar Jackson, they were a 10-6, a playoff team. You know, I just don't think that Jordan Love, I mean, I've never been on Jordan Love. I've already talked about it earlier, but I'm at a loss for words.
Yeah, but really the best thing that can happen for the Packers is that Aaron Rodgers doesn't have another MVP season, because then they can move on. They can, the front office can justify the pick, and they can say, see, we told you, we have to move on. Aaron Rodgers is aging, et cetera. Because if from a fan's perspective, if Aaron Rodgers comes out there and throws 35 touchdowns and they win 12 or 13 games again this year, the front office can't do anything except probably extend the guy, because he has no guaranteed money after 2021, so they'll probably have to throw some guaranteed money at him. Be like, okay, here.
And that's probably part of what he wants now. That's I think that's what a lot of this is about. Is he wants
the security. He wants to know that he's going to be there and be the guy. That's what he wants throughout this whole thing. He doesn't want money. He doesn't want all this. He just wants to know that he's there. He's going to be the guy.
Yeah, because the contract numbers that he still has remaining aren't bad. I mean, he'd make like $36 million a year or something like that.
A bargain.
Right. But even for him, like $36 million is not, it's not like he'd be, you know, making peanuts, but there's no guaranteed money. And that does nothing for an NFL player.
Right. And
every time they get to the non-guaranteed part of a contract, it's like they just start, you know, sitting on pins and needles waiting to see if they're going to get cut.
Yeah, so I think the answer is it's kind of hard to come up with a realistic trade scenario because none of us, especially because none of us believe he's going to really get traded anyway. Right. So from at Beryl Joffrey, does RB efficiency really matter when you are deciding between or ranking the upper tier guys at running back? So, Justin, what do you think of that question? I'm not really sure what I mean. I would assume efficiency always matters to you somewhat, but I think volume is kind of king in everything, isn't it?
That's exactly right. I'm first going for volume, and then I'll worry about, like, if I have to tie break it, okay, I got two guys that are similar, and I'm trying to decide between the two, then I'll factor in some efficiency stuff. But I just want someone who's going to get touches. Because, I mean, David Montgomery in his rookie season wasn't good. Kept getting touches. Last year, explodes. Touches are literally all that matters for running backs for me. Because bad running backs can score a crap ton of fantasy points. Again, you're welcome, at house.
And yeah, I mean, I think that was kind of sort of our issue with Dobbins is we can definitely see a scenario. He's likely going to be a pretty efficient running back,
right?
But we don't know what his volume is going to be. So is that basically where you're at, Kevin?
I mean, yeah, volume is king in fantasy. So, you know, give me the running back, you know, if I'm going to go through those guys. I mean, the least questions behind him. So, you know, Jonathan Taylor, yeah, maybe there's a little bit of a question because they seem to like, you know, that kind of mixing in other backs. I mean, Taylor's going to be a stud, but I mean, there's a little bit of a question. McCaffrey, I mean, if he gets a hangnail, yeah, it might Chuba Hubbard might come in. But, I mean, other than that, I don't think he's going to factor in. Saquon Barkley, yeah. And then Dalvin Cook, Madison's strictly a backup. And then you start to get into, you know, Alvin Kamara where, you know, maybe Latavius Murray keeps the role he's in. And then DeAndre Swift with all his, you know, Jamal Williams taking some work. And, yeah, so, I mean, volume and the least questions surrounding the running backs, that's my tiebreaker.
Yep. And I will say, with just listening to you list them off, that Kamara is probably the one you're most got to weigh his efficiency, because he's not going to get the volume that all those other guys you said are going to get. So,
right.
And that could be definitely a concern this year. We don't know how efficient a Winston or Taysom Hill-led offense will be. So I guess that's something to keep in mind with Kamara. But basically all the other guys that we talk about in that range and the top guys are volume guys.
Big time bell cow guys. Yeah.
Yep.
And Kamara, for everyone, he still gets touches, the most valuable touches, at least. He gets those receiving touches. So, I mean, you're talking about a guy that's going to
– I mean, yeah, that's true. So I think he had the thing where he was getting – I think what he had, like exactly 88 – or 87 catches, 81 catches, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Like 3 years in a row, yeah. I think before last year. Okay, so one last question here before we can finally finish up. And I don't really want to get into the exact question because we've talked about it. Well, it says, why is San Francisco the best landing spot for Julio? I assume this guy must be a San Francisco fan at fantasy.
Very much so, yeah.
I don't want to get into Julio landing spots too much, but do either of you guys like San Francisco as a landing spot for Julio? That's the question I wanted to ask.
No.
Not really, no.
No.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I already, you know, me and Russ have talked about this plenty of times on this show, is that we have our concerns about Ayuk and Deebo. We think probably both are not worth the cost because of that very reason. It's a run-heavy offense. Kittle's probably the lead target guy. If Julio goes, and you're going to have some combo of Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance, who everybody loves, but I mean, we don't even know how good of a passer he is in the NFL. So I do not want Julio in San Francisco either. I don't see that making any sense at all.
Realistically, like, you know, the Titans are another big option. That's not, to me, it's not a great landing spot either, because they don't throw 570, 600 times, whatever. They're still a relatively low volume, 480 attempts last year, 481 for Ryan Tannehill. That's scary for me as well. And everybody is like, oh, yeah, send him to the Titans. Well, now you're going to hose A.J. Brown and Julio, because Julio's not Corey Davis. I mean, Julio is Julio. So he's going to demand more than 90 targets or whatever as a player, not in the locker room, but like on the field. You just can't not throw the ball. So,
I mean, the one thing I would say to that, I don't hate Julio in Tennessee just because the running backs aren't taking a lot of catches. There's not much else there to take a lot of catches. So even with 480 passes, say, to go around, if they don't, and Tannehill's been pretty efficient since he's taken over as the quarterback there. There's certainly a scenario where both A.J. Brown and Julio Jones could get plenty of targets. I mean, are you going to pass on them to throw a bunch to Firkser and Josh Reynolds? Yeah, I mean, they could still have 100 plus, definitely 100 plus. I'm not sure how plus, but.
Yeah, but to be Julio, you need 150 targets, you know? That's what he's been getting his career is 150, 160 targets. Like, that's what he is, you know, where he's catching just 100 balls, 105 balls, and, you know, those 1,400 yards. Now, granted, he's 32, so I'm not sure how much of that is left in the tank. I still think he's, as a Falcons fan and my favorite player of all time, he's still the best wide receiver option on that team. And if he moves, basically anywhere else is going to be the best wide receiver option, including Tennessee.
And do we think, though, that he's going to get 150 targets anywhere else?
No. I'll tell you where he could go. I could tell you one place where he could go and he could get it. And we already talked about the quarterback. That's the Lions. So, and that's the very ideal spot for him to land, because we know that Jared Goff will funnel him targets, and that offense will do it. And there's nothing else there. I mean, it's TJ Hockenson and
it's barren.
Williams.
You're ruined TJ Hockenson season, Justin. Stop that.
No, I'm not. Because there could be two there, because they're going to throw a lot, because their defense is horrific.
That's true.
Either way, he's going to cripple somebody I love, whether it's, you know, Hockenson or A.J. Brown. So we'll see what happens wherever he goes. He'll probably end up in, like, New England, and, you know, good luck with that, with Cam Newton throwing the ball. Good Lord.
Let's hope not.
Rest in peace, Julio. I really want him to climb into – I think he could end up being – I realistically think he should end up top three in receiving yards by the time his career is over. And if he can play four more years, he could pass Larry and be second overall. But not if he ends up with, you know, a Cam Newton-led offense or on the 49ers. Oh, gosh. I'll be rooting for him.
Okay, so again, I feel like I have to do this taking over for us. That's the end of our show sheet, so that's the end of our show. I want to thank Kevin again for coming on here. I want to thank Justin for co-hosting with me this week. But Kevin, why don't you just again remind everybody where your Twitter handle, where they can find what you do, and all that good stuff.
Yeah, and again, thanks guys for having me. I'm like, this hour and a half literally blew by, and that's the mark of a great time is when, you know, you feel like you just started and, you know, going through all that. It's a pleasure, guys. You can find me at KTompkinsII on Twitter. Again, I do work over at Ball Blast Football, at Fantasy Pros, at Fighting Chance Fantasy, and then also our podcast. I did mention it in the show, but didn't mention in the beginning, the Fantasy Besties on Mondays. We do stream on there, as well as Lightning Round, youtube.com/lightninground. We do some short form content as well. Just add Ian Hart, it's on there. We're going to be doing a big with Dave Kluge from Football Guys, zero RB versus zero wide receiver, the ultimate smackdown. That should be fun. But yeah, we're doing a lot of stuff over there on Lightning Round and those other sites, and love chopping it up with everybody. So again, guys, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure. It really has.
Yeah, Kevin, it's fun having you on.
Yeah, it's definitely been a blast. I appreciate you coming on as well. And so I guess I just got to finish up with some of our business. I'm hoping by the time I finish this, we'll be there. But I had to mention, I think Russ would be proud of me that I think we may get to 90 minutes here, even without him. So I feel good about that. again, I'm at Dynasty FF Addict. You can find Justin at Run DFF. I'll mention too, Russ, you can find at Dynasty Outhouse. The pod's at Trey Addicts Pod. DAP Network is at DAP_network. Definitely give a subscribe, rate and review to both Trey Addicts and the DAP Network. Great content here. We got the Trey Addicts, Dynasty Junkies, Fantasy Timeline, Get Real. A lot of good pods on here. So definitely do that. Also, the Patreon, you can look at our beautiful faces while we're recording here. I do not know the Patreon by heart, so Russ, you'll just have to listen to a previous episode where Russ says what it is. But definitely subscribe to the Patreon. There's different tiers. You can get in the Cool Kids Club, which is the chat where Justin and I were arguing back and forth about Chase Edmonds and Carson Wentz and Baker Mayfield and a bunch of other stuff. So a lot of good discussion going on in there. And then, of course, I have to mention FF Pod Shirts, storemb.com. We sell a lot of different shirts and stuff there for, obviously, this pod, all the Dynasty DAP Network pods, also other pods as well, Dynasty Vipers, FF Intervention, I believe Superflex Super Show is in there, probably a bunch of others I can't remember. And all the proceeds do go to charity for this month and next month. It is the Brain Aneurysm Foundation in honor of James the Brain. And then I think in July, Russ will be picking a new one. So come get a shirt, donate to charity. It's all for a good cause. And I think that's pretty much it. So good night, fellas.
Night, Rocky. Good night, Kevin.
Good night.